Let's say hello to Eric Zorn. He is the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel. It's a newsletter you can subscribe to on Substack. You can find out how to get it by searching Substack or just write ericzorn@gmail.com. Eric, I don't know what happened to my account, and I paid for mine, lifetime member, but I was able to read it today.
Well, I'll be tech support for you when we're good off the air, John. I'll be sure to. What I'll do is I'll have you start. You restart your computer.
You know, it's funny because one of our speed jokes today was, you know, you're middle aged when you say, "Honey, what's our username? Honey, what's our password?" But that's the thing. I was supposed to sign in with my username or password. I tried both of my normal email. It's not about you, Eric. This is all about me. And I didn't remember my password. I wasn't sure if I was using the right email to access the account. You know, it was easier. It was better to me when you would just write your articles in a newspaper and we'd pick it up on my doorstep and I would read it that way.
Yeah, but this is so much more fun. I get to do so many more topics and so much more with like funny tweets and sniping at former colleagues, and just the whole thing is the whole enterprise is, I think, more fun for everybody. So
I think you're right about that. That's the price you pay, or that's the benefit you get. Your articles are longer. There's more words per week from you, and you do get to wander in places like ripping on John Cass. You and Neil Steinberg at the Sun Times have found some fish in a barrel, and you guys are just having a heyday over there.
Well, you would want to talk about that a little bit. I mean, John, who has a podcast on WGN Plus, he recently moved to Indiana, which is fine. He moved to suburban Indiana, northwest Indiana. But he was being kind of squirrely about it. He was trying to hide it. He announced with some fanfare when he moved into the city a couple of years ago, and then suddenly he moves to Indiana, and it becomes this rumor, and people are trying to track it down. And so finally, Bob Goldsboro at the Tribune wrote for his upper bracket column, one of the items in it was John Cass's move to St. John, Indiana, blah, blah, blah.
That's the real estate column, yeah.
That's the real estate column. And John really sort of had a fit about it. He was saying that people were mad at him at the Tribune, that this was Tribune editors trying to dox him and everything. And so a columnist in the Reader just did kind of this funny piece where he rode his bicycle down to St. John and talked about what you could see down there. And Cass acted like he was coming to his house. And the guy said, John Greenfield from the Reader and from Streets blog, says, I'm not going to Cass's house. I'm not going to approach him. I just want to see what this town is like, why he might have moved there. And Cass had a fit about this. So this is pretty funny. And so today, Neil Steinberg on his site wrote a piece about when his move to Northbrook was chronicled in the Tribune and how he just kind of said, well, okay, that's fine. They think I'm upper bracket. They think I'm newsworthy. That's fine with me. And so he was contrasting his response to John's response. And I don't know, maybe it's a lot of inside baseball, but Charlie Meyerson over at Chicago Public Square says that whenever he mentions this story, he gets incredible numbers of clicks on his site. So people do seem to be interested in the goings on of columnists and former columnists in town.
And John Cass particularly, but I will say that they wrote up when Brenda and I sold one of our homes in LaGrange Park, and we weren't thrilled about it. It's the purchase price. It's how much money you ended up making. Our house was so modest. Its upper bracket was a misnomer, and you don't feel worthy is not the right word, but you think, why is, you know, it feels a little personal. It's none of your business, and I'm not Patrick Kane. So why are you telling people how much my house sold for?
Well, it's public record, first of all, is why they do it. And people are curious about it. And, the Tribune's been doing this for at least 20 years because that's when they did the item on Steinberg. And I guess their measure is whether the person is interesting enough to have their move chronicled. And I would feel slightly flattered if they paid attention when I move. And I would also have the same reaction you did, which is like upper bracket. I wish. You know?
I've been to your house. It's an awesome house. What does your house go for, Eric? How much do you think we could get for your piece of real estate?
I would guess somewhere around 600, maybe 700.
Eric, just that's upper bracket. Eric, my friend, most people don't have $600,000 homes.
Right. No, that's fine. But like I say, anyone could go on Zillow and find out that information. It's not that hard to find out.
You know, that that house in Ottawa, $250,000.
No.
I'm telling you.
Oh, my goodness.
LaSalle County, let that be your real estate oasis, sir. The hinterland, and they're not even that hinter, the lands of LaSalle County. You can get some real estate for a lot less.
I just want to tell your listeners that it's not quite Downton Abbey, your house in Ottawa, but it is awfully nice. It is a really nice place with a nice big yard. Are you kidding me, $250,000?
I hope I don't insult you with that, because your house is lovely. And really, your block and your neighborhood are really, it's, if you live in the city of Chicago, you'd like to live where Eric Zorn lives. But I'll bet south of $350,000. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. I mean, your house is twice the size of our house, and the lot is probably five times larger than our house.
Eric, your house costs a lot more. Double what my house costs.
Location, I guess, right?
Well, I know. So that's the thing. If you want to live in the greatest city in the world, Chicago, in a nice neighborhood with access to the lake and Wrigley Field and the interstate, and you have all of that, more or less, then you pay a premium for that. You know, there are virtues of living in Ottawa, Illinois, having a house out there too, but they're not that. They're quite the opposite of that. You know, you kind of get away from it all. That's not why I asked you to be on today, but go ahead and finish that thought, Eric.
It just does take you a while. It does take one a while to get to your house. I mean, it's not a little easy commute. So,
well, when last time Thomas Jefferson was in town, in fact, you were at the show, and after the show, Clay Jenkinson, who portrays the president on stage with me, he'll do Teddy Roosevelt with me this fall. I said, hey, come out to my place. So I put him in the car and I said, we'll drive out. You can stay overnight at my house. And after a while, he said, where are we going? Where do you live? We were on I-80 heading west. And he said, I don't want to see Iowa today. But we eventually took the exit, and he couldn't believe how different Ottawa is from a condo near Wrigley Field where we used to live.
He probably thought you were kidnapping him or something.
He wondered if I had some nefarious designs. So of the topics that caught my eye on your newsletter today, micropayments, the uprising bakery, and dynamic pricing. I'm going to pause here. Where do you want to start, Eric? What's foremost on your mind?
Let's talk about this uprising bakery and cafe story. It's been in the news, it's in the Tribune this morning. I think the Sun-Times had an editorial about it. So that's kind of a fresh news story. Let's go over that one.
Picayune Sentinel publisher and editor and delivery boy, Eric Zorn, whose articles appear sometimes in the Daily Herald, formerly a columnist in the Chicago Tribune, joins us on Tuesdays. The Uprising Bakery wanted to put on for maybe 40 people a kid-friendly drag show. Eric, what's your thought about this?
Well, my first thought, I mean, I am not into drag shows. I've been to a couple in my life. I don't understand exactly why people find them so entertaining, but I am fine with other people who want to go to them. And I was really disappointed and a little dismayed to see how people were reacting, not just up in Lake in the Hills, but all over the place. People were sending hateful letters to the bakery and cafe and demanding that they not have this event. And then the day that the event was supposed to happen, early in the morning, somebody broke a bunch of windows there and spray painted anti-LGBTQ graffiti on the property. They arrested a man who drove like 60 miles up from Alsip in order to allegedly commit this hate crime. They charged him with a felony hate crime. And so that was the story. And then Lake in the Hills, the village of Lake in the Hills, cracked down on the bakery and cafe. They said that you're in violation of our zoning statutes, telling them that you're not zoned for entertainment. You're zoned to be a bakery and cafe, not to be an entertainment venue. And my thought when I first read those stories was, well, you know, the rules are the rules, and if they were breaking the rules, then even though it kind of looks bad, because it looks like what happened was Lake in the Hills is on the side of the vandals and the people sending the hate letters and leaving hateful voicemails and so on. It looks like they are giving the haters what they want. And this is sort of all a little bit independent on, you know, how you feel about kid-friendly drag shows. I mean, it's it's like if people want to do that, if people want to bring their kids to that, you know, okay, fine. I don't know why this is anyone, why this gets anyone all excited. So I was thinking, well, the rules are the rules. And the ACLU jumped in and said that this was an unconstitutionally selective enforcement in violation of the First Amendment. So they were saying that you were trying to clamp down on the freedom of speech. And I contacted the ACLU on this yesterday and got their side of the story. And what they point out, which I think is very interesting, and it hasn't been highlighted that much in the stories and the editorials that I've seen on this, which is that on July 8th, like, you know, nearly a month ago, the village had written, they were aware of this event, and they were concerned only with a little line in the advertising for the uprising event. They said that you use the saying, get those dollar bills ready, which makes it sound a little bit like a strip show, you know, where you're sticking dollar bills into garter belts and so on. And they were complaining about that and asked them to cool it on that. But then the rest of the letter, and this is from the Community and Economic Development Department in Lake in the Hills, you know, the suburban community. And they said, beyond that, the village appreciates and respects your efforts to operate your business. We are not aware of any issue that would arise from this event. And then they gave them some reminders about various little fine points about how the liquor license and the fire ordinances and the tax ordinances apply. And then the letter, and this is on July 8th, it concludes, we wish you continued success with your business and appreciate in advance your compliance with the village requirements, period. And so everything was going along fine. They were advertising this. And then, like I said, the haters came out of the woodwork. The vandal came out of the woodwork. And suddenly Lake in the Hills has changed its mind. And it really strikes me as Lake in the Hills giving over, surrendering to the haters here. And it's a really bad look. And, you know, we'll perhaps get down to arguing about the zoning requirements and whether it's a good idea to have these kind of shows in those kind of venues. But the fact that the village was supportive less than a month ago and has turned on a dime after this outcry has occurred makes it really look like selective enforcement. And therefore, I think the ACLU's got a pretty good point.
They told our Lisa Dent yesterday that they also, or at least Lisa raised the point, that the woman herself who runs the bakery felt that there was a bit of a conspiracy. There was some cahoots between the town officials and her landlord, who said, if you go through with this, and the landlord met with the town officials without her being there. She said, even if they allowed me to do the show, the landlord's going to kick me out of my lease. So I can't win, and I don't like the fact that they were having a meeting about my business without my being there. But if it was up with people, Eric, but it was a violation, it sounds like there was some sort of administrative confusion here with them endorsing it in that letter. But if the town ordinance prohibits that, I think she's still up against whatever the letter of the law is, right?
She may be. I give you points, by the way, for even remembering Up With People, which I believe was the halftime act when the Bears were in the Super Bowl in 1986.
Score.
Am I right?
Score. I know they did an NFL. I know they did a Super Bowl, and Pete says, yeah, that's how long ago it was that Chicago had a Super Bowl ring. Up With People was the halftime show. Holy cow.
But here we are circling back to Up With People. But they had had, according to the stories I've read, Uprising had had some shows before this, and they were things like Disney karaoke and resume building seminars and so on, that they had had a number of events before this.
Yeah.
And you're right, if it was Up With People, is this content discrimination? Are they saying, we're discriminating against you because this is something, and let's, you know, a family-friendly drag show is still a little edgy by a lot of standards, right? It's like it's not just a puppet show or something.
It's too bad we didn't have that show so that we're judging something that didn't happen. There's all kinds of drag shows. I want to read this text to you, Eric. John, Eric, zoning is important to allow people to pick where they live and not get blindsided by entertainment that does not fit with their family values. So maybe it is about the content of the show per se.
Right. And I think that's why the ACLU jumped in. They're saying this is content-based restriction on their freedoms, which is likely to be unconstitutional, especially if it's after the fact. I agree with your with the person who texts it in. Zoning is important. It's important when people decide where to start a business and where they decide to live. So I'm not minimizing that at all, which is why my first response to this story was, well, the rules are the rules.
And no, but they're not endorsing. They're not endorsing what you're saying, Eric. They're criticizing what you're saying. They're talking about the values of the people that live in town that don't want to see a drag show at the bakery. That's why they live there. That's why they want the zoning to support them.
Well, but I'm saying I agree with that. But what is it about when you're talking about a family-friendly drag show? What is the difference between that and, say, a Disney karaoke show?
Well, you know well what the difference is.
I know what it is, but if it's not in the law, if there's nothing in the zoning that distinguishes between those two things, it says this is an adult use, and they're saying this is a family-friendly show, so it's not exactly an adult use. I mean, I think it's difficult, and I try to put myself in the position of the landlord who is rented out. They're saying, oh, it's a cafe and a bakery. That's a nice little addition to to my property here, and then all of a sudden it's putting on these shows. I understand that person's point of view as well. And I'm very curious how it's going to resolve itself. But I do think that this letter that I talked about, this July 8th letter, is a very important piece of evidence. Plus the fact that they've been putting on other sorts of shows. There's nothing about a family-friendly drag show that is necessarily any more or less disruptive than, like I say, a karaoke show or something like that. So it's an interesting story, very interesting story, and it's not going away. It looks like they're still negotiating. The Sun-Times editorialized in favor of the cafe and bakery this morning. There's a very long story in the Tribune this morning about this issue, laying out some of these details. And I think it's a really interesting story to be keeping an eye on.
And, you know, I'll side with the bakery owner, though, like you, it's not my cup of tea. If you want to go, who cares? But the town has so shot itself in the foot on this. This does not 40 people were going to go see a drag show, and maybe some children would be there. We have no idea how they would have performed the show, and it would have happened and gone away, and nobody would be harmed. And the world would still rotate on its axis. But now you want to create, you want to be the editorial subject for weeks in the local newspapers, then you're going to get it. And for that reason alone, if I'll side with the lady, because she wasn't trying to create a ruckus. They created it.
Right. And of course, the ruckus was created by essentially what we call heckler's veto, right? The people who were heckling them down, who were shouting them down. There were going to be demonstrations opposed to the show during the show that were scheduled. So there was going to be additional police presence and so on. I mean, it was a cluster event, as they say.
I guess every spotted owl has been saved. That's your issue? You're going to make a sign and go stand in front of a 40-person family-friendly drag show? How in the world is that your issue?
There are some places, I think in New York City maybe, where they have drag shows in public schools, like they'll be part of the entertainment.
Okay, I don't know that I like that.
And I can understand where like I say, I think there's an edgy quality certainly to drag shows. There's some content to it. I can understand where parents might say, hey, we don't want this to be in our classroom. We don't want our kids to be subjected to that. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're not talking about a situation where people are forced to go. They're going to go around Lake in the Hills and round people up and put them in vans and make them go watch the show. This is for people who want to go to the show, and I don't see why it would be a particular problem. Like I say, you and I won't be there. We'll be sipping drinks on the patio in Ottawa, one of your many balconies.
At my estate. Ding, ding, ding. Time's up. Last text are these. They don't want it, John. The public should have a voice. The next one says, family-friendly drag shows, an oxymoron. The next one says, does Lake in the Hills enforce this zoning rule with coffee shops that have an open mic? Thanks for your text. Eric Zorn, I'll talk to you tomorrow on the Mincing Rascals podcast. You can read his writing at the Picayune Sentinel on Substack. Nice to talk to you, Eric.
I'll look forward to it, John. Thanks.